Welcome to Dudes on Movies, a podcast where dudes talk about movies. I'm your dude, Scott.
I'm your dude, Dave.
And today we're discussing 1992's Alien 3, directed by David Fincher and starring Sigourney Weaver. But before we do that, let's talk about what we've been watching. Dave, what have you been watching?
I watched In a Lonely Place with Humphrey Bogart and Gloria Graham.
Ooh.
Yeah. Good movie.
That sounds amazing.
Yes. Dude, I mean, Bogart often played characters like, you know, who were morally sketchy, you know, and who mostly looked out for themselves. But in the end, you know, his character would always like come around and do the right thing.
Yeah.
But this is not that. You know, there are moments in this movie that you haven't seen from him before.
Really?
It's like where he gets this like malevolent smile at one point and is sort of delighting in describing like inflicting violence on someone, and it goes on for like 5 minutes. I've never seen him like this. This is definitely different than what we're used to with Humphrey Bogart.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's really well done, and he and Gloria Graham have like amazing chemistry together. So I'd recommend checking into this one if you haven't seen it.
You know what else is amazing? I watched a movie with Gloria Graham in it as well.
Okay.
The Greatest Show on Earth.
Oh, wow. Right.
Oscar Best Picture winner.
Yes.
From 52 or something like that.
Cornell Wilde and Jimmy Stewart. Yeah.
Yeah. Cecil B. DeMille directing.
Yep.
Charlton Heston plays a circus showrunner who's no nonsense and by the book.
Yep.
And he's got Betty Hutton and Gloria Graham fighting for his attention, and you know, he's got to keep the show intact and you know, trucking along to, you know, save it. And
yes,
it wasn't a bad movie. It's got a bad reputation for being one of the worst Best Picture films, and I can see that. This doesn't feel like a Best Picture type movie to me, but it won the award. But it's not a bad movie. It's just because of that, it has a reputation.
It's very well made.
Yes.
You know, whether you like it or not is kind of up to you. But like you can look at it and go, well, this is professionally put together, and it's obviously Cecil B. DeMille is a craftsman.
Yeah. You know? And you know, it might be a little too long if you ask me.
Oh yeah.
It's kind of long. There's a lot of showing the circus acts that, you know, I don't need to see the horses going in a circle for another 5 minutes. I'm good.
I know, that's true, yeah.
But you get to see a lot of cool circus stuff and a lot of tightrope stuff, which is really the thrust of the story. There's two competing tightrope trapeze artists,
yes.
And they're trying to get the center ring, you know? And a lot of things stem from that.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, it's a pretty good movie. If you haven't seen it, I'd say watch it, you know?
Yeah.
Especially if you're like an Oscar completionist or something. Which, you know, I'm on that journey.
I know.
So that's why I watched it.
I had a feeling that's why you plugged it in.
Had to knock it out.
Right.
All right. So now let's talk about Alien 3, Dave.
Yeah.
Why don't you give everyone a synopsis?
Sure. So this movie is set directly after the events of Aliens, the second movie of the overall franchise. And when Lieutenant Ellen Ripley escapes the Marine spaceship with Newt, Hicks, and Bishop, her escape pod crash lands. And it's on this planet, Fury 161, and she's presumed to be the sole survivor of the crash. But after she comes to and the wreckage is reviewed and inventoried, it's discovered that that's not the case, because the egg on board the craft has hatched, and it's doing what these creatures always do in these movies.
yep.
And this is a film that has its moments, but I think that just like with any franchise movie, your reaction to it somewhat depends on your level of fandom and dedication for the overall series. But we're looking forward to going through it with you.
Oh, yeah. This is a young Scott favorite, Alien 3.
Uh-huh.
It's much maligned.
Yes.
And I probably rightfully so, I can see. It's not a perfect movie. It has a lot of flaws to it.
Yes, agreed.
I don't know how familiar you are with this, but I've seen it dozens of times, as well as the special edition I've seen many times.
Okay, I had not seen it dozens of times. I was familiar with it. I'd seen it once, and I hadn't read
it. Okay,
yeah.
So the differences between the two versions, there's like a 30-minute time difference and completely different scenes that replace the same scene. It's insane.
I read about the stuff because you texted me and said, hey, what version did you watch or whatever, and I told you it was a theatrical. And so I looked into the assembly cut to see what the differences were.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a different movie. Yeah, even though I didn't see it, I was like, well, I missed some stuff there.
Yeah.
You know?
And we can get into that as it comes up, you know, I'll bring it up. But Yeah, the movie picks up. It's right after the events of the second movie. You know, poor Ripley, she keeps going into hypersleep and waking up in the distant future in a crappy situation.
She can't keep doing this, you know, because it's just getting progressively worse, you know?
Yeah, so she crashes. These prisoners, like, it's a prison planet she lands on, and it's probably in the middle of nowhere. No one ever visits this planet. No one wants to. It's an old ore refinery planet, yeah. And it became a prison planet because the company that ran it just shut it down.
And it was the company that ran it Weyland-Yutani?
Probably. Okay. I mean, in these movies, everything is Weyland-Yutani, right? You know? But
I don't know. that's part of this franchise that I find that I like is that they've envisioned a future where corporations do run everything. I mean, like,
yeah,
because it doesn't need to exercise. Are present in our present times, you know, corporations run a lot of stuff. But like, this is full on, like, it was a prison, it was a penitentiary, mm-hmm. maximum security that was run by a company, you know?
Yeah.
That's messed up.
It was a for-profit prison, essentially.
Unreal and terrible. Yeah. Yep.
Too bad those exist in real life, too. But at least in America.
What are we doing?
Yeah, I don't know, dude. But something that's cool, you can see in some of the exterior shots, there's a Tyrell Corporation building in the background.
Oh, God, like, I didn't notice that.
Catch. It's real small in one of the shots.
Oh, my gosh, okay.
Yeah, it's like an Easter egg one of the guys threw in there.
Wow.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
So maybe they own it.
I mean, they're as bad as Weyland-Yutani, I guess, much, so they're as irresponsible, yes.
See Rucker Hauer, like, running around in this movie?
You know what? Honestly, if like, Daryl Hannah was doing cartwheels in the background, I'd be okay with it.
The alien is getting, like, punched around by Decker.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And William Sanderson is in the corner playing with toys.
Oh, that pretty disturbing.
Yeah.
About as disturbing as some of the stuff in this movie.
Yes.
Anyway, let's get going now. So the prisoners find her. They bring her in. And she wakes up and is like, what the heck happened?
Right.
And Charles Dance plays Clemens, the doctor of the facility. And he tells her, hey, you know, you crashed. Everyone's dead except you. And you're here on this planet, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You know, sets it up for her. And she immediately wants to know what happened because she suspects an alien immediately.
Yeah.
Because this poor woman can't escape the alien.
I love the phrase, she suspects an alien. Like, we all know what that means because we've seen the movies, but it's just a strange thing to say.
I know. One of the differences is this whole intro where they find her.
Uh-huh.
Like, in the assembly cut, she's washed up on the beach, kind of, and the prisoners are out hauling oxen around, like livestock, and they find her.
Right.
And you get a shot of Charles Dance kind of walking solo. Like, he's a lonely man. He doesn't, like, fraternize with the rest of the people there. He just kind of isolated himself.
So yes.
You see him wandering by himself, and I think he, like, carries her in to the building and stuff. And you see, it sets up the world a little better, I think.
Well, and I read that David Fincher, like, disavowed the whole film, you know.
Oh, yeah, he hates this movie.
Yeah.
I know about a year ago he said something to, like, Screen Rant or some mm-hmm. at some place he talked about it, how he fucking hated it.
Yeah.
Because there was no script for this movie.
That's script.
He
right.
was they had a script and then they rewrote it about 400 times and never had a final version.
Right.
Never even had a rough draft for him to work from. Which is amazing that they got anything out of this movie.
I know.
Without a script.
They shot, the whole production with no script. Right. That seems impossible.
They had a general idea from the first director, David Willard or something like that. I can't remember his name.
It was some guy I'd never heard of.
Originally, it was Rennie Harlan.
Yeah.
And I don't think he was under contract. Maybe he was. But he worked on it for like a year in pre-production.
Okay.
And so, then he bowed out because he didn't want to do what the fucking studio heads were going to make him do.
Man, it's just, yeah, that's right, because I read about the interference. I didn't realize it was Rennie Harlan, but then, you know, they didn't learn their lesson, and they started like putting their fingers in Fincher's stuff too.
Right, yeah. And then they get that guy in, and he wrote a whole draft where the movie was going to be, instead of this prison planet, it was going to be this like monk planet,
a monastery
that floated through space made of wood. It was really weird stuff.
Okay,
it was like a Death Star made out of wood.
Wow.
That these monks lived on and like had an atmosphere and everything.
That sounds all right.
Ladders going hundreds of meters into the air and stuff. Like, it sounds neat and sounds cool, really, but
imaginative.
Like,
yeah,
a lot of the story that happens in this version that we got stems from that script. Like, they changed it to, like, all right, well, let's make it a prison.
Okay.
And let's make them prisoners. And
yeah,
they kept a lot of the same stuff. Like, the fire scene, that was part of that script. They set, like, the wheat fields on fire and stuff. Like, so they kept a lot of the spirit of it. But they totally just trashed the script and fired the director and was like, no, fuck this.
Right.
We're doing something else. And, you know, this is what you get when that kind of stuff happens. And you set a date. And you make a release date, not a movie. You know, like, yeah, that's ridiculous,
right,
that people do this. Just release it a little later, you know, get something solid.
I mean, I know.
Fucking bottom line at these companies, they've got to please the shareholders. We've got to make our money.
But wouldn't the shareholders be more pleased if like their revenue was deferred maybe 2 weeks?
Oh, you know, not that quarter they won't. You know,
that's the other part. Yeah, exactly. So. Like, because we have this great system, and, you know, where we have to, like, if the economy doesn't grow 2%, no matter what, we're in a recession. And, you know, if the company doesn't grow that much, yeah, well, we didn't have a good year.
Weyland-Yutani needs that bottom line to go up. You know, at least. 2 bits.
Imagine, you know, the shareholders call at Weyland-Yutani. You know? Holy crap.
Yeah, this is Bishop 2 here. We're not making enough sales out here in Fury 161. Production's down.
They would make Bishop take the call. They would. Yes.
Lance Henriksen plays Bishop 2. That's his character's name in this movie.
Bishop 2.
Which is ridiculous. Yes.
Speaking of, though, this setting, like the whole thing with the prison planet,
yeah,
it is original.
It is, and it looks good.
It does.
It looks really good.
And I especially like the idea of the violent inmates of a prison planet forming their own religion where they live monastically.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you're definitely not expecting that the first time you see the movie.
Right. And, like, that stems from that original script, you know, the monks in space.
Right.
So... yeah, and they abide by these rules that they've put in place, you know? They took a vow of celibacy, so they're not going to be prison raping each other.
Yes.
And they're not going to be fighting each other. And I'm sure there's little tiffs
There's dust-ups here and there.
Just always
right.
happens, but Charles S. Dutton plays Dylan, and he's kind of the head prisoner who keeps everyone else in line,
yes.
you know? And it's probably his idea to form this...
yeah, he might have been
church
a leader.
Or whatever right. it we want to call it. You
right,
know?
He's the founder of their religion.
Yeah, and he's the voice of reason most of the time when things do happen, and you know the leader in a way.
Like, yeah,
they look to him for advice and you know instruction on what they should be doing.
And it's a good move because he's obviously like the most learned guy there. And,
yeah,
and he's also very very much. I mean, like. When he comes on screen, you're like, oh, Charles S. Dutton.
Yeah,
he's probably
right?
in charge.
You know? He better be.
Yes, exactly.
Yep. So anyway, she wakes up, wants to see the bodies to make sure no alien business is happening.
Yes.
And Charles Dance obliges.
Yep.
He takes her down to the morgue, and you get a really nasty autopsy on Newt.
When Charles Dance gets out the rib spreader.
The saw?
Yes.
Ugh.
I mean, it's like...
Looney Tunes type,
I know,
like
I know.
Rib splitter.
This is itchy and scratchy shit, dude. You
yes.
know, and they're just showing it to you, and then Ripley has to stand there and watch.
Yeah, the sound design.
Oh my
this.
God,
this movie. I feel gross watching this movie, and not many movies make me feel that way. And you know what's funny? The only one I can think of besides that is Seven from David Fincher.
Yes.
I just feel like, and covered in filth the whole time.
That's good filmmaking.
It is, isn't you know?
It? Yeah, that's movie magic.
And that's one of the strong points of this film. It's a mess story-wise.
Yeah.
But it looks great. The shots are all fantastic.
I know.
It's got that visual feast that you get from David Fincher. And you get that the extreme violence and extreme situations mixed in with this excellent drama.
Yeah.
Like, that's what Fincher does so well. And you see it in this movie, even though it's his first film and he was fucked by the studio.
Yeah.
He did what he could.
You know, it's like, did you ever see Paul Thomas Anderson's Heart 8?
Yes.
Like, he hates that movie. He doesn't like it at all.
Yeah.
And I understand it's okay. Why. Yeah, exactly.
But it's nothing compared to the rest of his films.
It's not Boogie Nights or Magnolia. No. Yeah. And it was just like David Fincher. It was like his first movie, his first studio movie, and it was taken away from him.
Yeah.
You know, and like when that happens, obviously it can like sour a filmmaker forever, or it can like make them go on to other stuff.
Yeah.
And like, even though this is kind of a studio hatchet job, all the things you mentioned, all the great stuff that the components that are there, yeah, along with like a great Elliot Goldenthal score.
Yeah.
I mean, like, speaking of Sphere, I mean, this movie succeeds in all the areas that Sphere failed.
Yes.
You know? I mean, it's like, for all its faults, it does create real tension, and it's much more courageous in using its atmosphere to create dread.
Yeah.
It's not gutless like Sphere was.
Right. Yeah, Sphere did. It was just a lot of talk.
Yes.
That was all it was.
Yes, a lot of, like no follow-through at any point.
And in this, like, no one is safe in this film, right?
I know.
Like, Charles Dance gets it quick.
I was so, like, the first time I saw this, I was like, how is he dead already?
Yeah.
You know, and he's like one of the most interesting characters in the movie, too. Like, you want more of his story.
Exactly.
His backstory is really fascinating.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my God, he's dead?
Yep. And a lot of that stuff that's been cut and put back into the assembly cut is a lot of the character stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost watched it also for this, but I was like, nah, I know enough about it. I don't need to rewatch it, but
yeah.
I want to go rewatch it. You were again. Just tempted, I'm just thinking right? about it.
Yes.
So like, but yeah, like the character stuff is so good. It's a better movie. There is superfluous stuff. The core flaws of Alien 3 aren't fixed by it.
Right.
But it's a better movie.
The assembly cut, I can imagine, is probably the better film. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Charles Dance is kind of like, why are we doing this? And Ripley says, because there's a possible contagion, a cholera outbreak maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And Charles Dance says that's impossible. Cholera has been gone for hundreds of years.
That's
right?
A flimsy excuse that Ripley gives. The cholera, right? Whatever.
And he knows. He's on to her.
Right.
And right away, he's like, so why don't you just fucking tell me what we're looking for?
Yes.
Now that I've cut this child to pieces. There's so much blood and like cracking bones and, oh, it's nasty.
And he keeps like, you keep cutting away to him, like, you know, putting his tools on the tray and there's like blood everywhere.
He just tosses the saw at one point.
Yes.
And I'm like, really? Are you a doctor or like a lumberjack? What are you doing?
The man's a butcher.
He's probably pissed off at Ripley for making him do that.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. Exactly. Right.
He also is probably quite interested in Ripley.
Yes, let's talk about that for just 1 second, because we're going to come back to the aftermath of the autopsy, but I wanted to talk about like the physical chemistry of Charles Dance and Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
I like that she just comes right out with it. Do you find me attractive?
Yes, me too.
You know? She, and
they're not playing games.
No, exactly. It's the future, and we're on a prison planet. Let's dispense
let's
with
get
the formality.
Down.
Exactly. Yes. Would you like to have sex with me?
Which is great. And that's a really good scene. Mm-hmm. It comes a little later. I think they're sitting there talking to each other.
Yeah.
And they're both deflecting each other's questions. I think she says something to him about like, why are you here?
Yeah.
And he's like, I like your new haircut. Immediately.
Yes. Right. Yes. And Sigourney Weaver looks fantastic with her shaved head.
Yes, she does. And then he says, tell me what we are looking for. And she says, do you find me attractive? So they're both avoiding these questions.
Yeah.
And then they get down to it. Yeah.
And we should have been given a more obvious love scene between the two of them, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I like the setup where she asks him the straight up question, you know, like I know she was deflecting one of his questions and he was doing likewise.
Yeah.
But then when she says, you know, do you find me attractive? And he goes, in what way? And then we just like cut to the next.
She goes, in that way.
In that way. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in that cut, we don't immediately see them together in the bed. Like
he's getting up, right?
Well, yeah, because there's that, like she's
or on does her, it cut to a different scene?
She's well, it cuts to them in bed, but we don't know it's them. All we see is Ripley.
Okay.
Instead, there's this reveal where like she rolls over and then he gets out of the bed, and we never saw anything physical happen between them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, it doesn't take long for the reveal to happen. I mean, it's 10 seconds.
Right.
But I mean, I would have liked to have seen more of a. I mean, we could have seen it in them at least the aftermath of them just like talking in bed together.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But this is like the two romantic leads of the movie, even though he's dead in 10 minutes, we don't even see them kiss each other, you know?
Yeah. That's
and all
true.
It is just they talk, they continue the conversation that they were having before she made the proposition.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it though. I feel like it's almost juxtaposed to the rest of the vibe of the movie, but I think they work well together.
Like I would have liked to have seen them go further with that part of it.
Yeah, it would have been nice. I think it felt a little rushed, I guess. Well, not really rushed, but it wasn't explored as well as it probably could be, and that's probably the fault of the script being a botch job, you know.
Oh, of like, course. Yeah. And there's a chance that even in the assembly cut, there might have been like 20 minutes of footage where it was like, you know, they had this, you know, like maybe 2-day courtship before they even went into bed.
I don't think there is. Like, I think this is pretty much what you get.
Oh, okay.
I think so.
I mean, like a deleted scene from the assembly cut.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It would have been 164 minutes.
Right. You know? Yes. Yeah. But ultimately not explored enough.
Right.
But yeah, I do like it. It's a good scene too when they're talking to each
it
other.
Is. Yeah.
But yeah, the aftermath of the autopsy, the warden comes in. Brian Glover, he plays Andrews, and is like, what the fuck are you guys doing?
Yeah.
And he's all upset that Ripley's walking around and stuff and riling up the prisoners, and now she's in here having you cut a body open. Like, what the hell's going on in my prison?
Right. Right.
I don't want you to upset the order, is what he tells her.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's a jerk.
He is a jerk. Like, he's not nice to anyone.
He's not. No. But I do understand his motivation. He's kind of like the chief of police in The Big Lebowski, the guy who runs Malibu. Yeah. He doesn't want, you know, the dude sucking around his citizens.
Yeah.
You know, Jackie Treehorn draws a lot of water in this town, Ripley. You don't draw shit.
Yeah, right.
That
yeah.
kind of thing.
Take your rug and go.
That's right. Throws a mug at her.
She's like, where's my rug? That's right. I had a rug in that escape pod.
But you know, he assures her, he tells her essentially that she's gonna be quarantined and she's gonna be in the infirmary until
right. yeah.
the company sends this transport to come get her.
Yeah, get rid of her, you know.
Yes, because she's supposed to be, and they want her alive because they're going to probably sweat her down just like they did in Aliens.
Exactly, you know? And right during the scene, Charles Dance takes Ripley's side and mm-hmm. kind of defends her.
Yeah.
And says, you know, it's okay, we better do what she says. We don't want this outbreak to happen. It would look pretty bad on your official records, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Even though he knows this is total BS.
Right.
But it's a good play, you know?
Yeah,
he's like, hey, I want her to be on my side.
Yes.
And I want her to trust me.
Yeah, there's like levels there, because he obviously likes her, and he also, he knows she's right about something. Doesn't know what yet, but...
So he knows the score, like, all right, something's up. I'm not going to let this asshole prison warden know what's going on.
Yeah.
I'm gonna keep it close to my chest and find out from Ripley.
Right.
So smart guy.
Yeah, exactly. Because I mean, it definitely like it puts the warden off the scent, and he lets them
right,
alone for a little
while.
You know?
So he gets to strut around and brief them in the cafeteria
yes,
a couple
exactly.
more times.
Of course.
But yeah, we get a funeral for the bodies now because she demands they get burned because of possible alien stuff happening.
It's a good idea.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Right.
So, I like this scene. They dump the bodies into the molten like lava or lead, I guess,
yeah.
whatever it is. You know, they're diluting that product. Weyland-Yutani is going to be pissed that this lead has like 1% body in it now.
I mean, that's an issue. You're right.
It's terrible. You know what? This came out around T2, and the ending of that movie was like a lead works.
I know.
So like, Fox got really upset and scared that they were going to get sued.
Is that right?
Because of this stuff, yeah.
Well, I mean, it yes, the end does hinge on someone plunging into this stuff,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, but it's not the same.
It's not the same. Like, Ripley doesn't tap her forehead or anything. I mean, no one
give
says,
a thumbs up.
Exactly. No one says the last chip is inside here or anything, you know. But
well,
there
it kind of is.
Oh, shit. Yeah, okay. Oh, my God.
Oh, everybody, you'll find out later what's inside Ripley, if you don't know already.
Right,
or
right.
If you can't figure it out, maybe you're not as smart as Charles Dance. Yes. Maybe you're 85. There's a character called 85 who has an IQ of 85.
That is the most wonderful reveal when you find out what 85 is.
That was a rewrite that was put in during the middle of shooting.
Okay.
He was originally a very smart guy who survived to the end, and then they made him an idiot.
Okay, well, the thing is, though, they didn't. He's not actually an idiot, even in the idiot cut.
I know, right?
You know, so
because he was playing it not like an idiot because he didn't want to. So they changed the dialogue so they would call him 85, so that we knew he was an idiot.
I see. Okay,
even though he doesn't act like one,
right?
Yeah,
he seems like a capable man.
He does. You know, he hits Bishop 2 in the side of the head. Lops that ear off.
Yes, exactly. He actually does the right thing toward the end. After, yeah.
Ah, man. But the funeral here, Dylan gives this eulogy about how we're gonna, you know, life will go on, and you know, from death, there's a new flower that is born and stuff. And while this is happening, it intersperses with the new alien being born out of this Rottweiler.
Yeah.
Who we've seen kind of, you know, having troubles throughout the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
You get dog mutilation,
which I don't really care for, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you know, we've both preached about this a lot. And I just don't like seeing it, everybody. I mean, you know, just animal cruelty is a horrible thing, and it's just part of it's just a plot point in movies, and that sucks.
It really sucks. The prop is a really good looking prop.
I know,
because it looks too realistic, and it's gross.
And they keep cutting between the funeral and the dog, like in anguish.
Yeah,
like it's kind of you know, and like you see it pulsating, and you're just like, okay, can we get it done? How about it's just we cut to the corpse, and the alien is fully formed.
Right. Yep.
Instead of this thing where it's like growing inside of it, and it's gonna like bust out.
Yeah. It's this movie gets pretty extreme with the gore.
Yes.
It's very gory, which I like.
Yeah.
It might not be completely necessary, but I think it makes this movie feel a lot different than the other ones, especially the first two. There's a lot of gore in those, but not to this level.
Well, I like the consistency of part of the gore.
Yeah.
In that, like in the first movie, remember how grossed out you are when you find out what's inside Ian Holm?
Yeah.
When it's like the milk and pasta.
The milk is gross.
Yes.
Man.
like Bishop has the same innards.
Yeah, he does.
You know?
The little bubbly rigatonis.
Yeah. Right, too. I like how they remembered that, you know.
Yep, he's al dente in there.
That's right.
Right, yeah. It does look good. Like, it looks consistent. It's you can tell it's the same world, right?
Yeah.
It's the same universe we're existing in.
Yeah.
And it makes sense.
Right.
Like, but
there's continuity there.
But yeah, you don't need to see this dog exploding.
I just like, especially the way it's like four or five cuts in between.
Yeah,
and
I got enough whimpering on the first
exactly.
shot. Thank
it's,
you.
It's, man, just end it. but yeah.
And so like that you see the alien covered in like placenta, basically,
right.
like rising out of it.
Right.
While you're hearing a eulogy being spoken.
Yep.
In the assembly cut, it's not even a dog. It's an ox.
Right.
They filmed a whole scene where they haul this giant ox in on like a meat hook, and it's hanging there. It's this huge prop, and they filmed a giant alien coming out of its chest towards the camera and did like 50 takes of it because they couldn't get the angle right. And they cut it because of they couldn't get a real ox to get a face hugger on its head or something. So they cut the whole thing and just filmed this dog, which is insane.
That is unbelievable, really. Yeah,
that's the kind of production this movie had.
Right, what a mess.
Yeah, yeah.
Whenever I find stuff like find out about stuff like that, I'm always like, I try to think of what it must have been like on set, but then I realize I don't want to be there because that sounds like the worst day at work that you can have.
Yeah, right.
You know, and but it just lasts for months because everybody's like highly stressed out. They're working around the clock.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was not fun to be around.
No, it had to suck.
Yes.
Yeah, and you get to see the alien for a split second. Like I said, it's covered in that juice.
Just viscera.
Yeah, and it like stands up.
Yep.
And it looks okay, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rod puppet in this movie that they use in a lot of the shots. There is a like a guy in a costume for a lot of it. But there's a lot of rod puppetry that's like just like put into the shots before CG was really being used.
Yes.
So it looks a little funky.
And there is some CG toward the end.
There's a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, in this thing with the rod puppet and the guy in the suit, they do, yeah, whenever they linger on anything.
When it's too long, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It just, then you start to see the strings. But, you know, like when it's just the quick cuts, it's effective.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We'll talk more about it later when we get to see more of it, I guess. But yeah. So now the alien's on the loose, you know, and we see the first kill, which is this guy's cleaning up like a vent shaft with a shovel. I mean, this place is filthy, guys. This whole place is covered in just diarrhea and head lice.
I know, exactly.
I'm not even joking.
You're right. It's just grime on top of grime.
Yeah.
And like, and it would be like your whole life. Like, that's probably part of their religion is sanitizing this place.
Yeah. Well, you have to have something to do.
Yes.
Right? Otherwise, you just sit there and go insane.
Right.
So this guy's on cleaning this giant pipe duty with a huge fan rotating at the end of it. First off, turn the fan off. Are you dumb?
I mean, honestly,
turn the fan off.
If it's a fan that can, like, you know, turn a human being into a pink mist.
It's like then, a 12-foot tall fan.
Yes. Like, figure it out. And don't stand 20 feet away from it where at any point a xenomorph could jump out and backhand you into it.
It doesn't even have to be a xenomorph. A predator could come.
That's true. You know? That's right. Predators are also in play.
You got to think about these things, folks.
Exactly.
Any job you're doing, evaluate. So this guy hears a noise and looks in a hole. He thinks it's the dog, right? He says, Spike, is that you?
Yeah.
And then, nope, it's a xenomorph. And he gets his head bit, and then he stumbles down the tube into the fan, and you get a huge blood and gut explosion.
Yeah, yeah.
It's disgusting.
It is.
But it's awesome.
Right? my only complaint, really, with this first kill is that, like, I guess it's because the alien is still considered, like, a baby, so maybe it's not, like, fully formed yet as far as its killing instincts.
Yeah.
Because it seems like previously whenever the alien was even like, you know, maybe 6 feet away from it, you're dead. I mean, it's going to get you and it's going to like just, it's super strong.
So you're thinking he would have died instantly. He wouldn't have been like screaming in pain and running down the hall.
And he wouldn't have been, he wouldn't have been thrown into the fan. The alien would have just like picked him up and like, you know, pulled him apart like a rotisserie chicken.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Know?
Yeah. I get it, yeah.
Yeah.
And this movie introduced an idea where whatever the alien gestates inside, it takes on the characteristics of it.
Oh,
so that's why this one's more like a four-legged creature.
Yes.
It's running on all fours.
You're right.
It was designed to be kind of like a puma or something like that.
Yeah.
And there's some awesome interviews of H.R. Geiger talking about the design, and he's like talking about the puma and stuff.
Yes, of course.
And, like, it's awesome, but they didn't go exactly with his designs. They like took some ideas, but then went more with just a traditional kind of alien look.
Mm, right.
And a lot of that was just because of how hectic the production was. They didn't have time to do it. They were building stuff while he's designing stuff, while they're writing stuff, while they're shooting stuff. And so they had to just go with what they could. And it strained the relationship with Geiger. Yeah,
I bet.
He like was like, no, fuck you, Fox. Fuck you guys. Right. I'm done.
No more of my ideas.
Yeah, yeah. I'll take the residuals, but you're not getting the getting the new stuff.
Yes, that's right.
So this guy exploded into oblivion.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man.
And, like, you know, the aftermath of it is essentially just that they Ripley knows, obviously, what just happened.
Yeah, she hears about it and is like, immediately, goddamn aliens. Yes. I know they're here.
Yes. And like, and she had seen like when they had her go into the pod to like check everything out.
Yeah.
You saw like markings from where.
Oh yeah. Like an acid burn on like a little shelf or whatever. Yep.
In all the hypersleep pods. Yeah. It had all been acided out.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know what Ripley's supposed to do in this scenario, because like she tries to explain to everybody, like once she decides to kind of reveal, you know, like, yes, I know what's going on. They don't believe her anyway.
Yeah, they don't.
Which I don't understand that part of it. I think that the script is I know there was no script, but like the characters themselves, I wish that they would have spoken to them and said, why do we not believe her? Why would we're in outer space?
We're in an alien movie.
Yes.
Come on.
I mean, we're like...
What else are these guys going to do? Right? They're stuck on the prison planet. At least entertain it for some fun. You know?
Yes.
It's like,
yes.
This is better than cleaning a pipe.
I guess now you have a mission and like some purpose. We're going to kill something. You know?
Exactly.
We're going to kill something that wants to kill us.
Right. And Charles Dance... It goes to the scene of the crime and he notices those burn marks also kind of on the pipe.
Yep.
So he's putting two and two together now. Like something actually is up.
Right.
And Ripley knows what's going on.
Yes. And I think he just full on confronts her. Okay. Yeah. Now you want to tell me what's actually happening.
Yeah. And before he confronts her, I know, she goes and gets Bishop's like corpse out of the trash so that she can access the flight recorder data.
Yes.
And you get a good like, floppy rubber Lance Henriksen puppet.
Yeah.
It's actually a fully automated robot.
Right.
It's not him in costume.
That was a really cool effect.
Yeah, it looks good.
Yeah.
It looks robotic.
Yes.
Which I think suits the character in the state he's in.
Oh, agreed.
Because he's not, he even says it, I'll never be top of the line again. I'm fucked up, dude.
Right. Right. Yes.
That's exactly what he says. No. But yeah, he looks like an advanced robotic android that is malfunctioning.
Yes. And when she retrieves him from the wreckage, the other inmates, they decide to like dispense with their religious vows. And led by Holt McElhenney, you know, who's, we get a very ugly attempted gang rape of Ripley.
Yeah.
You know, and thankfully, Charles S. Dutton shows
up. Yep, and a pipe.
Yes.
They both show up
together. Right. He just starts swinging this pipe.
He whacks him in the head.
Yes, it's great.
And you get a Sigourney punching a guy in the face to end it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's gross.
Right.
I'm glad it didn't go much farther than it did.
I know that, like... I know why that they have this scene in there, because it's a realistic situation that would happen.
It's very realistic.
I just don't know why they had to make it so stylistic.
Because, right, yeah. Like, the guy puts aviator goggles on and screams to the heavens like he's Lord Raiden or something.
It is very much a Mortal Kombat, like, you know. And I was like, what are they doing? You know, they're making this like kind of metal.
Is this what happened to Andy Dufresne? Like,
yes.
Boggs screamed.
Yes. I mean, what if the sisters did this?
Yes, right?
You know, that's not, fuck. It's just the worst. Now, thankfully, it doesn't go as far as what happened in Shawshank, because, like, you know, Charles S. Dutton saves the day.
Yeah.
But, like, I was sitting there like, man, wow, come on. Get on with this. You know, and this is gross and unnecessary.
Yeah.
You know?
And I'm glad Charles S. Dutton beats the dude. He hits him, like, 18 times while he's on the ground. I'm like, he's about to kill this guy.
And Holt McElhenney, we don't see him again. So did he die?
Yeah, we don't see him again, do we?
Right.
I never
he's
thought
gone.
About that. Maybe he is dead. I don't know.
Because like when during the 18 wax with the pipe, you hear like more of that like David Fincher Foley we were talking about.
Yeah, the Foley work.
Where it's like it's making that squish sound and you're like, oh God. I mean, is his head coming apart right now?
It might as well.
Yeah.
Or maybe he died in the fire. Like, I don't know, because we lose like half the cast in the fire.
Well, that's and true.
Nothing
yeah.
is explained.
Yeah, they don't really account for who got into the fire. Yeah.
That's a real like budget cut scene.
Yeah.
Like, all right, we got to get rid of half the cast right now.
Because the guy who was in Paul McGann also disappears from the hospital.
Yeah, Golic. You
know? Yes.
I know what happened to him.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah, I can explain it.
Explained it, yes.
But anyway, yeah. There's a whole scene later when we get to the fire, I'll explain it.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And from here, we end up, like, with now, I think it's, like, shortly after this is when the kind of search party happens, where everybody's, like, walking around trying to find the alien.
Because there's three dudes down in the tunnel trying to, like, I guess, clean up more diarrhea.
Yes, exactly.
And the candles start getting blown out.
Yes.
Which, the alien wouldn't do that. Hopefully it's just a draft.
Right.
And not the script.
Yep. I know. Right, exactly. Yes. Jeez. And it's Leon Herbert. And then Paul McGann is like there with him. And, I think
there's a third guy.
There's a third guy as well. But like we cut from like the blood spatters on Paul McGann from Leon Herbert. And then we smash cut to the Bishop puppet.
Yeah.
Like being put on the table so
right,
she can
yeah.
start working on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you're right. But yeah, that kill is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It might be the best in the movie.
Yes.
The alien grabs him and, you know, uses his second jaw to bust his head open.
Right.
And Golic, Paul McGann's character, is below him and the blood just splatters. Like, it looks like he got a paint bucket thrown in his face.
Right.
That's what happens here.
I know.
It's a really cool effect.
It is. And like I was glad that they lingered with the death of Leon Herbert's character for just like 2 seconds, and then when the blood spatter happens, like it's such a rush of blood.
It's so quick.
Yeah.
And the sound of the kill, like you hear that skull like
yes.
crush, and then the splatter of this typhoon of blood that hits him.
Yeah.
Like, it feels so visceral.
I know.
And horrifying.
Yep.
And I think on the screen, it comes across that way.
Because, like, if that was you, if you were Paul McGann in that situation,
yeah.
like, you're essentially dead yourself. Because, like, it would be almost like a living death. Like, I can't experience anything more horrible than what I just did.
Yeah. And he essentially is... freaked out the rest of the movie.
Oh yeah,
you know, as much as he's in, and he's got that blood dried on his face the whole time.
Yes,
yeah, it's pretty. It's something else.
It's quite a weird turn for Paul McGann's career.
Yeah, right.
I mean, he had played I in With Nail and I, and here he is now. You know.
Yeah, you know,
pretty crazy.
Unfortunately, a lot of his stuff was cut from this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get to it.
Yes.
But, yeah, he's in they think he killed the people downstairs in the basement, you know? And he's freaking out, screaming, like, I didn't do it. It was a demon. It was a dragon.
Yes.
Is what he says. And Ripley overhears it and is like, I want to hear him what he has to say about this dragon, you know? Because I've got secrets I'm not telling you about, and I need to know about what he's seen.
Even if Ripley... like not revealing secrets is part of the equation. The man is covered in blood.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like something weird happened here.
Yep.
He was like maybe smashed in a trash compactor.
Something
know?
Happened.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I just thought of? After they make love, right?
Yeah.
Sigourney Weaver and Charles Dance. That's like shortly after that. Well, never mind. I was going to say that Golic was in the room while they made love because of the editing, but he wasn't.
Oh, he wasn't.
He
okay.
wasn't.
Okay,
no,
yeah.
he wasn't. That would have been, I would not have been surprised if the film was edited that way because of the issues it has. But
I mean, yeah. that would have been like a good Flight of the Conchords gag. Like you don't even know he's there and then they just cut over and there he is.
Yeah,
know?
Right. He's like eating Cheetos or something right. on the couch. Ars Barker is there just hanging out. Yeah, dude. But yeah. So now, what happens now? Well, see, I've seen this a million times, yeah. And I still can't keep it all straight
because it's a mess.
I know.
You know, it's a little bit of you know, a scramble.
This,
so
this is another episode of Scott defends a bad movie.
Yes. but yeah, here we are now, and like I think this is kind of where Charles Dance gets killed.
Yeah, yeah, because they're all three now. Yes. three of them.
And he reveals in this scene before his death, like, what this place actually is.
Yeah.
And it's like another part where it's like the kind of the most interesting part of the movie.
Yeah.
Where he's like, yes, it's a prison facility, but like the prison was up and running for a long time. It had thousands of inmates, and the company came in and decided to shut it down. But there was like a contingent of inmates that wanted to stay there, and yeah. They wanted to like live as monks, as we said. And the company was like, okay, it's your funeral. I guess this place is yours. And then every 6 months they send a transport with like, you know, supplies that are cheap. And so they have food to eat, and they can just, you know, essentially like live out their days in this place.
Right.
And Charles Dance was a criminal, but he wasn't like a hardened criminal. He was a practicing physician who was also a morphine addict.
Yeah.
And when he was on duty, while he was high, he caused the deaths of like, you know, several people.
Yeah.
And so that was
because he prescribed the wrong doses.
Yes.
Of whatever it was.
Right.
So he killed like a dozen people.
Yep.
Because he was high. I think he says he was out drinking too, and he got called back in, you know, after a 36-hour shift or some crap.
Right.
I don't know. But yeah, that's why he's in prison.
Right.
And he says to Ripley, do you still trust me with a needle? And, you know, because he's going to give her some kind of concoction for some reason.
Yes.
Oh, because she's having like nausea and like chest pains.
Right.
People.
Right. My God, Ripley, at this point, I mean, like,
if she suspects an alien, she should be like, oh no, my chest hurts. And my throat is sore. She says that.
I mean, go to Charles Dance, go to everybody who you trust and say, look, there's an alien in here. You guys have to kill it. Now, right now, I'm going to go jump in that lava because it has to happen. You know,
I've been face huggered for crying out loud.
Exactly. Yes. I know that this thing is in me. I watched John Hurt expire on the dinner table in front of all of us.
Right.
You know?
I was eating when that happened.
Ugh.
Imagine.
It's the most famous scene in movie history, everybody. We gotta get out of here right now.
Haven't you seen Alien? Oh my God. Yes, but he gives her the concoction, and as he does it, a shadow comes down behind him, and there's like a, you know, a medical curtain, like that separates the beds and stuff, and it's like that clear plastic. So you see it, that's like alien drop down behind him, behind the plastic, and Ripley like looks at it, and he turns around to look at it, and the alien grabs his head with the plastic around it, which is really cool.
It is.
And blasts him in the head with his second jaw, and just destroys this guy.
Yeah.
He's dead.
And the effect of like using the medical curtain as a sheath. I mean, like it's what Dexter would do.
Right. Yeah. You know? Alien doesn't want that blood to get back
exactly.
on it.
It's like, keeping everything sanitary.
It's not going to spray on me. It's going to hit this plastic and go down. I'll be good.
Very strange kill. And like Ripley is affected by it. I mean, like she's grown to, you know, like be fond of this guy. But like in the moment, she doesn't have time for that because it's a xenomorph on the loose.
Right.
And then we get this moment that like is key for the rest of the movie because like the thing is chasing her around. And probably the most famous shot.
It is. This is the trailer moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like, it's weird because I was mistaken about this movie's reputation.
Okay.
Like when it first came out, I was young, you know?
Yeah.
And I saw tons of stuff on like MTV where they'd like use, you know, this famous clip of Ripley, you know, in it with her head against the wall while the smaller alien emerges from the mouth of the, of the
big like one. The alien's face is right against her face,
and she's like sweaty and like, you know, trying and thinking that she's about to die, but it just it threatens her and then backs away. I mean, if you'd asked me back then, it seemed like this was like essential cinema the way they were selling it, at least in the places I was looking at it. But like, there wasn't so I guess back then there wasn't so many discussions around this stuff like there is today. And because you could only read critical reviews in newspapers and magazines, you know, you didn't get like all the immediate vitriol from hardcore fans that we do today.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
Like if this came out, like imagine if there was Twitter in 1992,
exactly.
This movie would be toast.
It would be, it would be like the same discourse that was around The Last Jedi, you know?
Right. Yeah. Or, Madam Web that just came out recently.
Yes, of course.
This was that level of a disaster, pretty much. And I'm sure it was even worse, I imagine.
But it's weird because, it didn't feel that way in 1992. Right, like, you didn't know it.
No, I rented this from the video store and went and watched it with my friend Jeff.
Yeah.
You know? I brought it to his house. Hey, I got Alien 3. Let's watch it.
Nice. Perfect.
All right, now we're done. Let's play Legos. Yes. Cool. Let's go jump on the trampoline.
Uh-huh.
All right.
It's amazing how sheltered you are, like when you're a child without the internet, you know?
Oh, man. Imagine that. It's never going to happen again.
No, that's it.
I guess unless you end up on the prison planet, Dave, you're going to have a cell phone with Wi-Fi. 5G.
Even like the that future would have like the conveniences that we have right now would be in like the scummiest places.
Yeah, and you know what I love though, like the set design and everything, it's still like those tactile physical 1980s keyboards, you know, where you push that
man.
But now I can just talk it into my robot in my hand fucking and it does it for me.
Fucking god.
Oh man.
Yeah.
But anyway, it doesn't kill her.
Right.
And Galak sees this and freaks out. And Ripley gets up and runs to the cafeteria where, Brian Glover is once again briefing the prisoners about crap they don't want to hear. And she runs in and yells, "It's here." Well, what's here, Ripley? You haven't told us anything.
Right.
It's here.
And like, there was an earlier scene too, between her and Glover where she essentially was like, you know, "Do you have weapons here? You know, what's the deal?"
Oh yeah.
And he explained what we explained earlier about the supplies. No, it's a prison. We don't have like, we have some, knives and that's that.
That was a big trailer moment too. I remember Ripley being like, "There's no weapons of any kind." And like, it's like, oh no, what are they going to do, man? I've got to go see this movie.
Yeah. This is intriguing. No weapons. Got it.
And he turns around. He's holding this like bouncy stress ball, like rubber ball in his hand throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
And he turns around and starts yelling at Ripley to shut up and stuff. And while this is happening, you don't get a second to think about it. The alien just jumps out of the rafters and just sucks him up into the vent shaft.
Yeah.
And you get a blood waterfall into this white cafeteria.
Yeah.
It's a great visual. And all the prisoners are scrambling and everything. And there's one prisoner named Morris, played by Danny Webb.
Mm-hmm.
He's got this chair in his hand, and he's standing there, and he's looking at this vent, and he goes, "Fuck!" It is one of my favorite deliveries ever.
Yeah,
in
pretty cool.
All of movies. Actually, this movie has so many good F words in it. Anytime someone says the F word, they really punctuate it.
They do.
This is a top three F word movie, everybody.
Right. They really hit that K sound at the end of it too. Like I like how it doesn't trail off.
Yeah.
You know, if you're gonna use the F word, then pronounce every letter.
Yeah, Charles S. Dutton has another good one, too, when he tells Morris to shut the fuck up.
Yes.
It's really good.
Yes, right. Yeah, everybody can really enunciate.
It's great, man. Yeah. It's like these guys have been, you know, classically trained in Shakespearean theater or something.
Exactly.
Which I think most of them have been.
They all are Shakespearean actors, yes.
I know Sigourney Weaver said, at least around the time of this or afterwards briefly, this was the best cast to work with.
I mean, it's impressive top to bottom. Yeah. I mean, like, you've got, everybody is a name. All like the seven principal actors are all, you know, people you've heard of.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird when something like a science fiction movie goes that deep with stuff.
Yep. And Pete Postlethwaite's in this movie, briefly.
I mean, like,
Steven, he's got a little bit, but
Steven Spielberg called him the world's greatest actor, famously.
It, yeah.
You know.
Do you know what his character's name is in this movie? David Postlethwaite. They couldn't think of a last name?
You know what? If your name is Postlethwaite, I mean, you better use it. You know?
That's true. And every character he plays.
I mean, just like, yeah, our man Postlethwaite over in London, you know?
Now they don't know what to do. And this is one of those scenes where they're all together trying to figure it out. And they're looking to Charles S. Dutton to like lead them and yeah. stuff. And he doesn't want to. He says he's not the leadership type.
Which is, I mean, come on, dude. That was a bit, I was like, yep. Wait a minute. You're not a leadership type. I mean, like,
yeah.
you gave the eulogy right? like unprompted at this funeral, and it was very eloquent and wonderful.
Right?
Life affirming. And everybody seems to defer to you every time you threaten to kick their ass.
He just wants everyone to think he's in charge, but he doesn't really want the responsibilities,
I mean,
you know.
Oh, dude, come on, step up.
He does, fortunately.
Yes, yes. But, takes him like 5 seconds, but he does.
But he says something about, you know, this might even be later when they do the same scene again. Just with less people.
Yeah, that's right.
Because they had to cut the cast down. But yeah, they look to Ripley for some kind of leadership too, because yeah. she's seen the alien in before and
yeah.
stuff.
And she knows that they know that she knows what she's doing.
Right. And at one point, 85 says he's in charge, and everyone's like, fuck that.
Right.
No.
I think Morse is like the most hostile to him.
He is.
Like, he's just like full. I think he introduces the 85 name. Like, he says,
yeah, something they, like, oh, great, 85's in
exactly,
charge.
Exactly, yes. Oh, well, you know, Brian Glover's gone, so I guess 85's in charge. And they all just, you know, and like, I think Pete Postlethwaite reveals to Ripley what 85 comes
yeah,
from.
Yeah, when they look for they go and get that flammable liquid or whatever. Yes. He says 85, they call him that because it's his IQ.
Yes.
And he's the second in command of this place, so.
Right.
So they all give him shit.
Yeah.
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 So.
I mean, that I guess if a room full of maximum security prisoners found out that you had a low IQ, they probably would use it against you.
Right. You're on paper dumber than all of us.
Yes. Right.
Based you know. On a standardized test.
Yeah. So. You know, there's all your weaknesses are definitely a disadvantage when you're in prison.
Well, that's true.
Right.
Yeah. So they come up with a plan. There's this toxic waste room that never was used, and they're going to lock the alien in this toxic waste room.
Yeah.
It's like 6-foot walls of steel. Nothing can get in or out.
Yeah. It's got
know.
Like those blast walls.
Yeah. So, they're going to try to like force it into this room.
Yep.
And so they're setting up like these, I guess, grease traps that they're going to light on fire
yeah.
and like flush it into that area.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of it kind of doesn't make any sense.
Dude,
like, how are they
going
to orchestrate this, you
I
know?
I was wondering, because, like, I saw this movie in 1993 and 2024, so I thought to myself, am I missing something? Or, like, is this kind of a bullshit plan? Or is it just so complicated that it's beyond my art? I don't know.
Like, how are they going to orchestrate it?
And right.
What happens is, it doesn't work at all. They don't even get to start the plan. Because they're putting all this flammable liquid everywhere.
Yeah.
And one guy's holding a flare in his mouth on top of a ladder.
Oh, man.
Because it's a movie
and
with no script.
I know. And when he drops it and he's like, it's out of his reach.
The alien gets him.
I'm like, ugh.
And it falls down. And you get a really cool slow-mo shot, though,
yeah.
of it like about to hit the ground and
yeah.
explode. That was kind of cool.
It is,
but
it's a cool effect, but yeah, like you said, this is a movie and that's why he's doing it. And honestly, if like the whole thing, the whole plan itself, if an audience member can't immediately figure out what it's supposed to look like and how it's supposed to go off,
yeah.
then I think you've made a mistake. And I'm glad that I know that they eventually abort the plan because it doesn't work,
yeah.
but it's still like a missed piece of the story. I mean, like I still to this day have no clue what I know that I know what the object of the thing was, but I don't know how it was supposed to work.
Exactly.
All
yeah.
I saw was a guy climbing a ladder with a flare in his mouth.
Yeah.
Which is like, I mean, there's just obviously, you know, that shouldn't happen on a construction site.
Exactly,
I mean, you know,
right?
Yeah.
Well, these guys play fast and loose. I mean, they're prisoners,
yes,
right?
That's true. Right.
So the flames go up and like half the people die, apparently.
And I like the ghostly aftermath.
Yeah.
Like the walk that follows the toxic waste explosion. It reminded me of what Lucio Fulci was trying to do with like the zombies in the hospital sequence from The Beyond.
Yeah.
Where it's like everybody's just kind of like walking through this landscape in slow motion.
Yeah. And there's kind of a fog or a mist.
Yes.
You know, and this, it's like the heat residual, like burning coming up, the smoke. Yeah.
It's like good filmmaking, you know, because obviously it's David Fincher. So there's like, you know, always going to be a real attention to detail and mood.
Yeah, exactly. And he nails that.
Yes.
But this whole thing is like done in 45 seconds or something. And in the assembly cut, this is a whole thing. They get the alien trapped in this room.
Yes, I read that too.
Yeah, they actually succeed in this plan.
Yeah.
The flames do explode and like people get dead and all that stuff. But they did something where they just cut it down to this, where, oops, I dropped the flare, next scene. No, but they trap the creature. And then what happens to Paul McCann's character, Golic? He starts worshiping this alien as a superior being.
Right.
As an angel, essentially. He lets it out of the chamber and goes in thinking, hey, you know, I'm going to let this angel out and it's going to do its bidding and it's going to, I'll be part of this, you know, as something better.
He's like Renfield.
Yeah. And the alien kills him, you know, immediately.
Sure. Yeah.
And gets out.
Right. Exactly.
So technically the scene is the whole capture it and with flames could be cut out anyway because it amounts to nothing.
Right.
But
right.
You do get some cool character stuff with Golic and this misplaced worship that he has. It's very interesting.
Yeah, it sounds way better than what like we saw here because like especially with Golic, how like nothing happens to his character. Like the last time we see him, he's in the hospital and he doesn't die, but he's just gone.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah.
And I guess you could assume he died in the fire or something. Right. I have no idea.
Right. But he wasn't like in the gathering when they made the plan.
Right.
Like he's like noticeably absent. So it's like
he's trapped in the hospital ward because he's insane.
Yeah.
That's what they say.
Right.
So, but yeah, they really screwed the pooch on his character.
Exactly.
Because it's a good character.
Yes. They should have done something more with him.
Yeah. So, but yeah. Now, Ripley goes and gets a CAT scan because she's having more chest pains. You know, she's got a little acid reflux. It's fine, everybody. Nothing.
God,
there's no signs of aliens, right? You
know, get me some bicarbonate of soda.
Yes, where are the Tums? Do you guys have any Tums? What about Rolaids?
Oh, man. Come on.
I'll take the off brand. I'll take the Weyland Yutani brand. It's fine.
That's right. Now, to be fair, she does figure it out right around here, right?
Yeah. Kinda, she like, gets the like, CAT scan because she suspects there's got to be something wrong with me.
Yes. And to be honest with you, the first time I saw it, it took me, I didn't figure it out either. Like, I didn't know that there was a chest burster inside of her.
The first time I saw it, I don't think I realized it either.
Okay.
And I think that's probably on me, because I think there's clues there.
Yeah.
But I think good filmmaking puts the clues there, but doesn't let you figure it out yet.
Okay.
I think that's, like, really quality stuff.
Yes.
And you think about it, you're like, oh, yeah, that was going on, you know?
Yep.
That's awesome, yeah. I think that's excellent stuff. David Fincher, of course. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Putting it in like that.
And especially, too, if he'd just been allowed to make his movie, then those clues would have been effectively placed.
Right, exactly. So she sees that there's an alien gestating in her chest cavity.
Yes, and 85 is helping with the CAT scan.
Right, so he knows what's going on now, too.
Yep.
And she says, hey, we've got to get, we got to tell people not to come because they're going to try to get this alien.
Yep.
And everyone's going to die. So tell them to turn around. Don't bring a rescue team. And he's like, no, screw you.
Right.
I think he gives a good F word, like fuck you or something.
He does.
You know,
yes.
Another good F.
Yeah.
And says, I got a wife and kids and a family, and I'm going home on the next shift. You know, I'm not ruining that for you.
Right.
You know, talking very smartly, you know, 85.
Yes. Right.
The poor guy.
Right. And it's one of those good, like complex problems where, you know, I can totally see where he's coming from with everything he says, but, if he does this, if he tries to like be an honest man and go home to his family, then the world is going to be in peril.
Exactly. And it gives him a good arc at the end of the movie where they go with it. So now Ripley knows she's got one in her. She's going to die. So she could try killing herself. She could go try to fight the alien. So she goes and looks for the alien and realizes it's not going to kill her. You get a really good, like, tense scene of her going down into a boiler room and looking for it. You get, like, a fake out where she thinks a pipe's the alien.
Right.
And when you see the pipe itself after she hits it, it doesn't look anything like an alien.
I was wondering what the hell. I mean, because I'd forgotten about this part. Yeah. And I was like, what's she doing? And why is there, like, what comes out of the pipe?
Just overgrown lice.
Okay, is that what that's what it is? Okay.
Just like massive lice.
Yes, yes. It was gross, whatever it was. Because
the planet is infested with lice. That's right. They say that.
That's right.
The pipes are just filled with like, oh.
That is truly
disgusting. What
about your disgusting
drinking water?
I mean, hopefully that ship gets here in time with all of our Evian.
With
you
some
know.
Raid.
Yeah, that too. Right, exactly. And some Rid.
Yeah.
You know? Jeez. Yeah. But yeah, like... It's a weird moment where like there's a bit of an in joke for alien fans because like, you know, she tells, I don't know who she tells. It's like, I think it's 85, that she's going to go down into the basement to look for it. He's like, how do you know it's going to be there? She's like, well, trust me, it'll be there.
Yeah.
And so like it's hiding in the pipes and with all the, like the duct work, because that's where it always hides.
Yeah.
You know, cause that's what it looks like.
Yeah. It's an homage to the original movie when she's in the escape shuttle and it's hiding in the wall.
Yes.
And it looks like a pipe.
And like I took it also like when Harry Dean Stanton has to go like find it in that room.
Yeah,
there's all those
there's like chains hanging.
Yeah, those S&M equipment hanging everywhere.
Right. Yeah.
For no reason. I
what floor are we on,
exactly,
Harry Dean Stanton?
Yes.
What are you and Yaphet Kotto doing down here,
dude? They had that little thing with all the porno mags right in the ship.
Right. Yeah.
So you
that's
know,
true.
Yeah,
they had that little bunker.
That's right. That movie's filthy.
That movie's awesome.
Yes, it is.
But yeah, she goes down and the alien kind of slithers out and the scene cuts.
Yeah.
And it cuts to her sneaking up on Dylan, Charles S. Dutton's character. And he turns around and it's like, oh, fuck, what are you doing?
Yes.
You know? You get a good one of those. And she's like, it won't kill me. I need you to kill me because I'm too much of a wimp to do it. So kill me now, please.
Yeah.
And he's got a big fire axe, this awesome fire axe, actually.
Yeah.
Those things are always awesome. It's got the big, like, pick on the back end, you know? Yeah.
It's really a cool noble stuff. Weapon.
Yeah, it's noble. So you get, like, a big scene of the music kind of swelling up as he's about to strike, and he ends up hitting the bars next to her, saying, I ain't going to kill you. You need to do it yourself.
Yeah.
And if it's not going to kill you, then maybe we can use that to our advantage. So we'll kill it and then I'll kill you. That's the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they've got this deal where that's the plan. You know?
And earlier in the movie too, there was an encounter between these two characters in the cafeteria. Where
Let's
was about
to
like
that.
You know like well I'll sit down and
it's right after she shaves her head
and he looks her right in the face and says, I am a murderer and rapist of women.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
her response is excellent. She kind of like takes a second to think and she gets that Sigourney Weaver kind of smirk, like cocked head a little bit.
Yep.
And says, well, then I must make you pretty uncomfortable. And she sits down right in front of him.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes.
Dude.
And she does not back down.
Yeah. She's like, all right, I'm not buying this. I'm in charge.
Exactly.
I'm Lieutenant Ripley here.
Yes, I know.
And so this is where we get the second scene of them all talking about what they're going to do. Yeah, I think this scene sucks.
Because you mentioned it earlier that this is the second time they've done this scene.
Yeah.
It's... Whenever there's a gathering and, okay, here's the plan, guys, and we're going to do something, we're going to go up against this alien, I I never have enjoyed that scene in any movie because it's completely unrealistic, obviously. And a lot of the dialogue in this gathering scene, it's silly and derivative.
It's a halftime pep talk.
It is. And I mean, like, and not even Charles S. Dutton can really save it, even though he's a very compelling actor.
Yeah.
And he can, like, make it work because he's just a great performer.
Yeah.
But, like, it's even beyond him. I mean, I'm just watching this going, let's get on with it.
It is, right?
You know?
He's like, do you want to go on your feet or on your knees begging? And then you get a couple good F words, I think.
Oh,
he's fuck that thing.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Let's fight it.
Yes. Yes. And that I guess that part of it is good with the, you know, fuck that thing. I like that.
I like the F word delivery. Exactly. But the scene, it's not good.
Because, like, that kind of language is usually not in the pep talk.
Yeah, right.
Like, it's usually Bill Pullman saying, you know, today we celebrate our Independence Day.
God.
You know?
And, yes. It's the same kind of musical swell, too.
It is, yes.
And even Sigourney Weaver, God, this scene, the tone of the scene is so weird. She's talking about how the company's coming, and they're not going to save us. They're here for the alien.
Right.
She says, because they think we're crud. She says crud.
She says crud, yeah.
And then immediately she says, they don't give a fuck about us.
Right.
I'm like, wait, which one is this? Are we in second grade or are we in high school? You know, what are we doing? You say crud and then fuck.
Yeah, that's like, bizarre. You're right.
It just feels so weird.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I agree with what you just said, your assessment there of the use of crud and fuck. But I don't hear the word crud very often in my life anymore.
Yeah.
So it was kind of nice to hear someone say it.
Yeah, it is.
You know, regardless of the context. You know, I just like the idea of crud.
I think her delivery I don't like also, because she fumbles that word a little.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't know what word to say, and she lands on crud.
Yes, right.
And then she's embarrassed in front of these prisoners, so she immediately backs it up with a fuck. Like, that's what I think's happening here. It just seems out of place for Ripley to say that. Yeah. I don't know.
If I was in this situation, I would make sure all my language was hardcore at all
times.
Oh,
yeah. I'd be F this, F that, yes. F that. Maybe not as good as Morris. Like, he's an expert.
Yeah,
but
he's a champion swearer.
Yeah. He's so great. He has a lot of great moments from this point forward.
Yeah.
Even if they're completely unnecessary, he has some good moments.
Yeah, he does. He does.
So they're all ready to go fight some aliens. They're ready. They're getting their boxing gloves on.
Yes.
They're ready. Getting in the ring.
And they've got another bullshit plan, unfortunately.
Like, yes.
That I cannot figure. I know what they're doing. I know what the end goal is.
It's the same idea, right?
Yes.
We're going to channel this alien into a certain area.
Right.
Which we can incapacitate it.
And the way they're doing it is, like, there's this series of tunnels that they're going to run through and use themselves as bait. And then, like, they'll slam doors to, like, you know, create diversions.
Yeah. And, like, block off its path.
Yes.
Because what they're going to do is funnel it into the mold for the lead works.
Yep.
And dump the hot lead on it.
Right.
And kill it. So, for some reason, there's 100 tunnels that go into the mold.
Yeah.
Yeah. That they have to go through, like, they're in some kind of gerbil habitat.
And how do they know the
exactly.
architecture of it?
I mean, like, I guess they've been there for so long, they kind of know, but
are
they playing tag down here on weekends? Like, what are they doing?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be something like that they must have run this course a million times.
Right, yeah.
You know?
They have, like, the annual Olympics for, like, the prisoner Olympics, and they have to do the obstacle course.
Oh, do you remember laser tag?
Of course.
Okay, now there was a low rent version of it called Photon that I played one time.
Photon.
And I guess in the backstory of this movie, we could decide that, like, they were playing Photon one day in these tunnels.
Right. Yeah.
And. Like, I guess that's what I'm going to go with from here on.
No, I'm good with Photon.
Okay.
That's what we've got no weapons, but we've got Photon. Who wants to play around?
Perfect, yep. Dude. Yes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Who would be the champion, though? Which prisoner would be the champ?
I'm going to say that, like, it's got to be someone who's, like, kind of battle-tested.
I think Morris would be good.
Yeah.
So he just seems like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
But it's, and maybe someone with
Charles,
like,
S. Dutton would probably take no shit from anyone.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he would actually play.
Yeah, the stakes wouldn't be high.
He'd be like a judge. Yeah. He'd be officiating the match. Anyway, so because of their photon knowledge, they can run through these tunnels and trap the alien.
Uh-huh.
So that's the plan. And you get some awesome camera shots of this.
Yeah.
Of them running through these corridors, and you get POV alien cam of it running and chasing them.
Yes. And the POV alien cam is like the best alien cam.
It's awesome.
You know, because we're not seeing a lot of the creature.
Mm-hmm.
We're just like seeing the after, you know, like seeing it chase down its prey. It's when they're using CGI for some of the shots.
It's not. This is all puppetry. That's superimposed into the film.
Is that right?
Yes. And it's because the puppet was not lit correctly.
I was wondering.
And some of the camera, they had to like calculate the camera distance from the puppet on the blue screen and the right angle to match the camera movements of the shot. And I think they do an okay job of that, but it looks kind of crappy. It looks like it is running up there. It just looks bad.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't look like it's not on the ceiling, but it looks like a fake alien was put on the ceiling.
And there's one shot, too, of, like, where it's just a, you see a, one of the guys running by, and then the alien is chasing it,
yeah.
And it's kind of got this, you know, like foot, yeah. Footfalls, and, like, it's definitely, it's like you see it kind of awkwardly running, you know?
Yeah, it is. It's a little funky.
In a side scroll shot.
Yeah, and that's one of those computerized shots they had to like really nail perfectly.
Okay.
And I don't think they nailed it perfectly.
No, they didn't. They definitely got
it close to make it actually work, but it didn't work very well.
Because I thought it was 1992 CGI when I saw it.
The CGI used in this movie is when the alien's head cracks and fractures. That's CGI.
Okay.
Yep.
Well,
trust me. I watched the 2-hour documentary two nights ago.
Got it.
For
okay.
The third time.
Wow. Okay. Perfect, dude.
Alien 3 is my jam.
That's great. That's awesome. I mean, I'm glad to hear it, because I when I was watching this, I saw what I thought was like some really sketchy early proto computer graphics.
It's
but, I mean,
a rod,
you know,
puppet on a blue screen that's being superimposed on a computerized camera track. It is some crazy technology from 1991.
Yeah. Wow.
And, you know, they were experimenting with this stuff, and I give them credit for trying.
Yeah,
but
I do too.
I mean, that's, if you see some of these shots of them, like, manning the puppet,
yeah,
it's insane.
Right.
Like, that the grueling work they were doing to make this, like, half-ass shot for the movie. Like, it looks half-assed.
Yeah.
Everyone working it was working their ass off.
And there it is, exactly. Yeah. So, like, the there is that one shot, too, of where it's straight on, and I think that what you described there about all the different composites that were used to, like, create it,
yeah.
Where the xenomorph is running toward the camera through one of the tunnels, and there's the open doorway. It eventually slams, but, like, that's the one that is definitely not lit correctly.
Yeah.
Because, like, you see this thing, like, that's not casting a shadow. And it's a different color than everything else, yep. Running toward the camera.
Shadows, some of that was CGI.
Okay.
Some of the shadowing was CGI, but a lot of it was like compositing.
Okay.
And man, yeah, like you said, it doesn't look right.
Right.
And that's the biggest problem. And you see a lot of the alien here. When it's the POV chasing, it's cool. When you see the rod puppet like skidding across the screen, isn't that great?
Right. It's less convincing.
Yeah. So, yeah. But yeah, whoever's left is down here. I guess they're being bait to feed this thing into the different chambers. I don't know.
Yes. Yes.
And slowly but surely people get picked off. There's one dude. I don't remember who it is in the movie or the character's name, but one of the prisoners is running, and right before he gets to like the big piston chamber they're supposed to get it into, the alien gets right on him and, like, I guess gets him. But you see from outside the doorway like just an explosion of blood fly
yes.
into the chamber. It's like an amazing shot.
Yeah, it's really cool.
It's if you like gore, it's an awesome gory visual.
Yeah, I like that they just like took advantage of their rating.
And what's great is you see his feet kind of swing up out the frame of the door and get pulled back into the door as the blood all flies forward.
Yeah.
Oh, so man, it's like, I know, like yeah. he got snatched yes. at full speed. Yes. Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah, you're right. That is like, cause I mean, it's kind of like when Deke gets the compound fracture in Creepshow 2,
yes.
where it's just a human body is not supposed to bend that way. Yeah. Really cool.
Yeah. Postlethwaite gets it. David Postlethwaite, played by Pete Postlethwaite. He runs and like closes a door and then like an idiot looks through the window and uh-huh. the alien gets him through the window.
I mean, it's just, you were out of there, man.
You had it.
Yes.
You could have been going home.
You
and Morris could have made it.
Yep. Damn, dude.
Or he could have like helped out 85. He probably would have died.
Yeah, probably so.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are some of the good kills. Some of the good Morris stuff is when they're running around. He runs into another guy who's holding scissors as a weapon.
Yes.
And Morris yells at him, hold him like this. And he's a schoolroom teacher.
I know.
Hold
like,
it by the
don't
the,
run
the
with
blade.
Scissors. Yeah.
Don't run with scissors. He's like, you're going to kill somebody.
Yes.
I'm like, dude.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's an interesting moment, but it's totally unnecessary in
yeah.
this scene.
It is unnecessary and weird, especially for his character, but it's a humorous moment during the chase.
It is. And it's weird because he gets another humorous moment just like this a few moments later when mm-hmm. he runs into another guy and they both start joking about how they thought each other was the alien.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're on the ground and like fake going at each other and
yes.
laughing. And then the other guy gets killed by the alien immediately.
Yes.
So you got like these two joke scenes with him, like one after another.
I know.
Almost. It's like, well, did you need both those things?
And the guy that gets it too was the guy that was running with scissors, right?
It might have been.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And is he also then like the kind of where it leads to is like there's this the area where like now Ripley and Charles S. Dutton are there. And they're all three with Morse, like watching the alien tear this thing apart, tear this guy apart.
Yeah, there's a guy in the there someone's there.
Yeah, someone's being killed.
It's Ripley and it's Dylan, Charles S. Dutton, and they're in the chamber.
Yeah.
And they're waiting for the alien to get in there. I think Morris or someone else, it's probably Morris. Someone's waiting for the alien to go into the chamber to start the piston.
Yes. Yes.
And he jumps out to grab a body and quickly like drags it back into a chamber and they start the piston while he's not in there anymore.
Yeah.
So they like fucked up.
Right.
So now they started this and they've got a countdown now. We got 5 minutes. And then like this happened like sometime during what we've all been talking about right now.
Right.
Like,
right.
Kills have been happening. The piston started exploding blood. It's all kind of just happening. And then, the last thing they have to do is lure it into the chamber, and Ripley and Dylan run that way, and it chases them in there somehow.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes.
And they're going to climb out of the chamber before they dump the lead in. Morris has gone up to, like, trigger it when they're ready, and they both start to climb, and the alien starts climbing the wall with them to get them, and Charles S. Dutton realizes, I need to stay down here, otherwise it's going to go up.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't want you. It wants me.
Right.
It wants you to live. So he sacrifices himself here.
Yep.
Yep. It's a good moment for Charles S. Dutton in this movie.
Of course it is.
He's down there. He takes his glasses off.
Yeah.
And the alien comes at him, and then you start getting a lot more good F words and stuff. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So, he's a really good actor.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like him and everything.
It's Charles S. Dutton.
Yeah,
for
he's great.
Yeah. So the alien kills him. Ripley gets up out of the chamber, starts climbing up some pipes, and tells Morris to hit the lead, right? And he dumps it. You know, Ripley's standing there. Morris is standing there. And then all of a sudden, the alien lunges out of this pool of molten metal and starts climbing up the pipes and stuff after Ripley.
Of all the, like, one last scares I've ever seen in a horror movie, like, this is the best one, and it's the most effective and the most believable.
I was about to say, and I think it makes sense.
Yes.
Because this is an damn near invincible creature.
Right.
And we don't really know too much about it, but we've been told in the previous movies that it's practically indestructible.
Yeah. And I think Ripley had said something about, like, you know, it doesn't, there's a little bit of a fear of fire with it, but that's it.
Yeah.
You know, essentially it is like, you can't kill it.
Ian Holm was like preaching about how perfect it is.
Yes.
And even in the second movie, they're talking about how like invulnerable these things are based on how they're built.
It's a perfect killing machine.
Yeah, it's a perfect organism.
Yep.
So it makes sense that this hot lead didn't really kill it.
Right.
It's not like us where we would burn after 100 degrees, you know?
Yeah,
like,
of course. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So it jumps out. It tries to get Ripley. And so she jumps on this chain, which is just like located beneath the lead pouring machine, which makes no sense. And then the water comes out.
None of these factories. None of it makes sense. I mean, like, it's always just, you know, there's vats of molten lead in everywhere around you.
There's Joker juice sitting around everywhere.
Exactly, dude. And, like, honestly, if the whole thing of, like, you're standing over top of a river of this stuff, like, the heat in there would...
I know, right?
You're done.
When they dump that lead, you do get a lot of good steam.
Yeah.
And Ripley and Morris are both like, damn, that's hot.
Yeah, exactly.
It's probably way hotter than that,
it's
though.
Amazing.
You're probably toast.
Like, the way people think lava works in movies. I mean, like, it's not just like I get like 4 feet from it and I'm like, ooh, ah. It's not, you're dead. If you get that close to it, that
can't
it.
Even look at it.
No,
your eyes would melt.
Yes, yes.
That thin, like, firm outer layer, the that stuffed crust outer edge, like, that is not going to protect you. It's still 14 billion degrees.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So now we get the CGI I talked about, the alien, you know, when something's hot and you pour something cold on it, it'll shatter. So that's what happens to the alien. It instantly cools down. You get the CG shot of its head for literally a split second.
Mm-hmm.
It, like, is turning its head. And you see it start to fracture, and then you get an explosion.
Right.
Because the laws of physics still affect the alien.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. That's something.
Yeah.
And earlier, too, when, like, in the encounter between 85 and Ripley, where, like, they did the CAT scan, like, the scene ended with him taking a transmission from the company.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, you know, it kept saying acknowledged transmission.
2 hours to arrival or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then we saw, like, the ship arrive. And this is some good miniatures work.
Yeah.
I like that a lot with the satellite and the ship in the background.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. And that was all practical stuff too. It's not CG.
Yeah.
But yeah, they arrive and it's 85, I guess, wasn't part of this operation.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to wait for his ship out of here. So he opens the door and lets, like, a doctor in or something. And Lance Henriksen comes in too. It's not revealed in that moment, but it's revealed now.
Right.
After Ripley and Morris are all up on the catwalks, you know, like, we finally did it. Hell yeah.
Right. And I'm watching it, like, now. In the first time I saw it, I didn't think anything of it. But in this time, I was like, I knew who it was. But I was like, I should have known when he walked in dressed like Claude Rains that, like, there was going to be some kind of reveal, you know?
Yeah, dude, that trench coat.
He's even got, like, a shawl or something. Like,
I know, he's protecting himself from that weird, like artifacts that are flying through the air outside in the environment.
Yeah.
It's weird. It looks weird. It looks bad from an effect standpoint, but I think it's suiting to the environment.
It's very otherworldly.
Like, it looks alien, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, exactly.
It looks foreign and weird.
Yes.
Like, because they're on this strange planet.
Right.
But yeah, he walks in. He's trying to form his potion to get his visibility back.
Yes.
He needs the alien to help him do it.
Right. So then, like, the main dude who's, like, in charge of the group, like, you know, like, addresses Ripley. But then, like, when she, you know, tells him, you know, where to go, that's when Lance Henriksen reveals himself. And he's Bishop too.
Yeah.
You know,
He's like, hey, I'm a real person.
Yeah.
They designed Bishop after me.
Right.
I'm not another droid. He's like, they sent me here so that you could see a familiar face.
Yep.
And she's not buying it. He's saying, hey, we are going to take that alien out of you.
Right.
We're going to kill it. Well, she goes, you're going to study it. And he goes, we can't let that thing survive. Yeah. It's a great delivery from Lance Henriksen because it's a total, you can read right through him like, that's bullshit.
Yes.
And it's because of Lance's performance.
Right.
He's trying to do that.
And someone
it's a horrible lie.
Exactly. And someone who isn't as smart and strong as Ripley would buy it.
Yeah.
You know, right. Oh, he really does care. You know.
Yeah, right. Nope. She's dude, like, no listen, way, dude.
No corporation. None of them care.
This is the third movie they're trying to do this to. Exactly. You. She's yes. not buying it no. this time. I would rather jump into molten lava. I'm going to T2 myself.
Honestly, it's the best move you can make.
It's
like,
the only move.
Yes. It's like, this is the only thing that's going to save humanity. I'm more noble than you are. Like, all you care about is weaponizing this goddamn thing for what purpose, I don't know.
Exactly.
So I'm going to ruin you. I'm going to blow up your spot, ruin all your shit. You're going to have to go back to the board now and explain what happened.
Right. Tell them what happened to your profits yes. on Fury 161.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
If they let you live, well, yeah. good for you.
So she closes the gate like, no, fuck this. And so they can't get her because she's on the other side of this fence,
yeah.
I guess. And they don't want to harm her because they want to get her and make sure the alien is safe. So they don't shoot her or anything. They can't do anything about it, really.
Right.
And during all of this, Morris like starts to fight a guy, I think.
Yeah.
And he gets shot. At some point, no, 85 gets shot.
Yeah, 85 is shot.
85 sees all this going down and is like, wow, she was right. This is horrible. I'm kind of an idiot. I must have a low IQ. Maybe I should do something about it. So he gets his giant space wrench and hits Lance Henriksen like in the ear.
Yeah.
And you get like awesome makeup. Like after he does that, he gets blasted with the machine gun.
Right.
And then Lance Henriksen like stands up and is like, no, or something. And his ear is like hanging there. It's awesome.
So the no comes later.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
When Ripley does like a trust fall.
It ruins the moment.
The no?
Yes.
It totally does.
This movie ends with, you know, Ripley doing the only thing you can do. Like you said, the trust fall. And it's a great moment where like on the plummet, the chest burster emerges.
Yeah.
So she dies on before she even hits the lava. And the alien, you almost feel sorry for it because it's like screaming.
She grabs the alien too with her hands to hold it in place.
Right. And you hear Lance Henriksen let out a big, dirty, no!
And you get a camera that's pulling down away from him as Ripley's falling. And it's like up on him going, no.
Ladies and gentlemen, I cannot tell you. I'd forgotten about this completely. And I was like, how did that pass? Like, I know that like 13 years later, they'd repeat this same bullshit in Revenge of the Sith. But even by 1992 standards, this was cliched and terrible.
Yeah.
So what were you doing? You don't put an extended no at the climax of your movie.
Maybe this was the straw that broke the camel's back. After this movie, people were like, no more.
I guess.
No more. If you write that in your script, you're banned from Hollywood forever.
And of course, George Lucas didn't see it. You know?
He didn't get that memo.
Right.
He was too busy counting $100 bills.
Yes, of course. Exactly. Counting fat stacks, dude.
Right. He's got alien money, just a different kind yes, of alien, you know?
Right. He is Weyland Yutani, essentially.
He basically is.
Lucasfilm is Weyland Yutani.
But what's funny is that Lance Henriksen actually becomes like Weyland, Charles
yeah.
Weyland,
yeah.
in the AVP movie.
Right, right.
So they based the Bishop cyborg model after the real Weyland.
Yeah.
Which is interesting that yes. that was kind of like a... when you watch the older stuff now, you're like, they kind of retrofitted this stuff in the future movies.
Yeah.
It's kind of fan service-y, you know. But
right.
at that point, when you're on the fifth film, it's a lot of fan service.
Well, yeah. And yeah. I mean, like, the whole thing about modeling the droids after, like, one... an actor that you have in your cast. I mean, like,
yeah.
I know Star Trek The Next Generation did that with, you know, Data and Lore look just like their creator.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Who would win, Data or Bishop? Who do you think would win?
I don't know. I honestly do not
Data
know.
Data would win, if you ask me.
But
he's got strength.
So does Bishop.
I think he would win.
Because Bishop did that really impressive game of Mumbledypeg in the first
one.
Well,
that's true, yeah.
So he's got super
speed.
He
scared the shit out of Bill Paxton.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, yeah, that's true. And I think Bishop has more of a natural intelligence.
Yeah.
Data is always searching for that.
And I even think that he's more developed because, like, Data's intelligence is always inconsistent, you know?
Yes.
Like, he's, like, in episode two, he is already, like, having sex, I am fully functional.
Yeah, he, like, bangs Beverly Crusher?
He bangs Tasha Yar.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Yes, yeah.
And the whole
Picard
thing...
bangs Beverly Crusher. Yeah,
that's right. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's...
Wow. That was episode two.
Yes, it was very early on.
That's true.
But like you know, two episodes later, he doesn't know what laughter is.
Right.
You know, his intelligence and his ability to like perceive human interaction.
That show
is very
famously had a lot of writing struggles in the first couple seasons.
It did. Yes.
Because of Gene Roddenberry.
Oh, that's right. He was still around.
Yeah.
That's right.
Wow, we went on a real tangent with Star
sorry,
Trek
everybody.
Next Generation.
Right, yes.
But, hey, it's a good show.
Yes, it is.
So Ripley dies.
Yes.
And in the assembly cut, there is no chest burster alien coming out.
Okay.
They don't have that.
Okay.
And apparently David Fincher was pissed they made the alien come out.
Oh.
I like it. I think it adds something to it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people thought it was superfluous just to show some more gore or something. I think it's a lot more poetic. Even though just sacrificing yourself without it coming out of your chest, still a poetic thing to happen. But I enjoy the fact that it all happened right there, final moment, and she actually grabs it. You know, I like that a lot.
Right.
I really like it. And I think it's a great end to the character. It really is. It really should have been the end of Ripley. They had to clone her again for a freaking fourth movie.
Right.
People say that movie's better than this movie, and I say, fuck you. There's my F.
Okay. I do not think that 4 is better than 3. Certainly not.
Okay. But 3 still not very good.
Well, there are parts of it that there are parts of it that are good, there are parts of it that are not good.
Okay, okay, you know? Okay, okay. Cool, cool. I sound like Tuco Salamanca right there.
tight.
Yeah, tight. Anyway, the movie's over and we're just going off the rail on tangents. You get the whole place starts locking down, like the music's triumphant and swelling up and they're closing all the doors. We see Morris getting hauled off and we get another FU from Morris. That's quite solid.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
the last line in the movie. Well, except for this, voiceover replay from the original film.
Right. Right.
You hear Ripley's diary log from the first movie where she says she's going to be picked up, hopefully, in a couple months or something.
Yeah.
This Ellen Ripley signing off. That's the end of the movie.
You know, of all the times where, like, you had kind of, like, you said, superfluous, you know, voiceover narration.
Mm-hmm.
Aliens is a beloved franchise, and Sigourney Weaver is, like, the star of it.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, it's earned. And the more time you get to spend with Sigourney Weaver and her character, probably the better. Even though we just saw her die, it's kind of, I guess, a cool effect for me to have this ghostly after narration.
Yeah,
you know?
It's fine. I don't love it, but I don't hate it either.
Right.
As a super fan, I'm like, okay, yeah, I know that's from the first movie.
Yeah.
You don't have to tell me. But it's a nice touch. Like, okay, she's signing off. She's gone.
Yeah.
Like, she's literally signed off from life.
Right.
And she did what she couldn't do, apparently, for the last 100 or so years of her life.
Yeah.
You know, because she's been frozen for most of them.
That's true, yes.
Her life has been nothing but death and nightmares. This creature has controlled her. She even, in that basement scene, she says that out loud. She verbalizes it while she's talking to the pipe she thinks the alien is.
Right.
but it's true.
I mean,
she can't live a normal life anymore.
She was truly in the wrong place at the wrong time when the thing was birthed, you know, and because she can't just go to another place and get another job, you know.
Yeah, she tried that in the second movie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I mean, Yeah, she has definitely drawn some tough luck here.
Yeah.
You know, and it's weird because, like, I didn't even realize it until you said about the hypersleep, how it's actually, you think that's, it's actually like 2 years, you know, this is all just taking place kind of all, you know, within like a short time frame. No, it's been going on for a century now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's interesting to think about that because she hasn't aged because she's been frozen.
Yes.
But how much in the universe has changed over those years?
I know.
Tons.
Right.
They touch a lot of that in the second movie, but, yeah, her life is, she can't have a normal life anymore, yeah. For real.
Yeah.
All right. So that's the end of the movie. She's signed off.
Yes.
Anything else, Dave?
A couple of things about Charles Dance and Leon Herbert. It's both of these guys have tremendous voices, and all the scenes that they're in, we talked about like the sound design with the Foley work and all the sound effects and everything.
Yeah.
Like the other part that really features in this movie is the sound of these guys' voices. Now, Leon Herbert only has dialogue in one scene, but it's really memorable. And I'm like, wow, that guy's got a powerful
set of
pipes.
It's pretty good. I think he says the word shit.
Yes,
and
he does.
Golic's like, hey, swearing.
Yeah, that's right. He like chastises
him. Like, shit ain't a swear. It's not against God.
Just this like incredible baritone that this guy's got. And then you like put that against Charles Dance. Very soft spoken. But like, you know, he's got that soaring Shakespearean, you know,
very articulated. Yes. Yeah.
Wow. He's great.
Awesome.
But yeah, that was my only thing. I like this. I like hearing those men's voices.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Like I said, I grew up on this movie. I had for one year as a birthday present, I've got a box set of VHS. It was Aliens and the Making of Alien 3.
How about that? Now, did you watch the making of before you saw the film?
Yes.
Okay. Perfect.
Yeah. It was like a 20-minute tape or something that came with the set. They were trying to promote the third movie, you know? And I'm like, all right, cool.
Man, VHS special features were so rare.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you'd get them and you're like, man, I wish this was going on for other movies.
I know, right?
I guess I'll just wait 15 years.
I've got the Jurassic Park one. I've got the Jaws one.
Yeah.
The two cassette set for Jaws. Yeah.
Yes. I remember you showing me that cassette. Yep. Yeah.
I haven't watched it though.
Okay.
Because I have it on DVD.
Of course. Yes.
But I would love to check it out as like a relic to see what it's like.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Dave. So would you recommend the movie?
This movie deserves a recommendation. I think it's quality. I think it's a quality film, and you can't go wrong with Sigourney Weaver in an alien movie for the most part.
Yeah. I was joking earlier about saying it's a bad movie. Scott's defending a bad movie. I don't think it's a bad movie. I think it just has some issues, and it's got a reputation that might be unjustly thrown at it based on just the production troubles it had.
Right.
And the expectations it had to live up to freaking Ridley Scott and James Cameron's masterpieces.
Yes, of course.
And I mean, it's a David Fincher movie, whether he disowned it or not. Like, it's a good movie, I think.
Yes.
I will defend this just like episode 2 to the end of my life.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Although
you compared
that,
those two films.
No, although I know that's a bad movie.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Right.
Anyway, yeah, but I would recommend it too.
This is
awesome. And that wraps things up. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to the show anywhere you get your podcasts. Rate it, review it, and most of all, share it. It gets more dudes listening to the dudes. And you can go to dudesonmovies.com and find anything you need right there.
Yep, and we're on Facebook, Blue Sky, and Instagram. Look for Dudes on Movies, and our email address is dudesonmovies@gmail.com.
That's right. And we have a question of the week, Dave. What is the question of the week?
What polarizing franchise films do you most admire?
That's right. Hit us up and let us know. And stay tuned next week when we do 2020's Bill and Ted Face the Music, directed by Dean Pariseau and starring Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter. So until next week, I'm your dude, Scott.
I'm your dude, Dave.
And we'll see you next time.